So I spent all of my money and so much of my time amassing a huge CD collection, which I continued to amass during college and after college even. But I was from more or less the last generation before the internet. And a lot of my friends that I've been working on this music scene with the last number of years are younger than me. They're a few years younger. And they grew up with the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed them to hear a whole lot of music for free, just looking around, you know, on the computer. And that, I think that has actually, no joke, had a huge effect on people, you know, where you can, if you have the interest and you want to, you can learn a lot about the music from listening and from reading without having to buy all those CDs and without having to spend, you know, without having to have money. And I think that's allowed a whole, there's other factors too, social factors and historical factors that have added to the fact that there's young people or, you know, whatever, another generation of people getting into some good music. But that's a big deal. The advent of the internet was a big deal, ironically, for down-home, grassroots, rural music, able to continue on into the present and the future. I loved going to J&R Music World. I looked forward to it all the time, you know, all the time when I was a teenager. You know, I'd go down there and just spend all the money I had on CDs. It was a great place. I remember when it closed, and all the CD stores closed, and I also got good stuff at Subterranean Records where I worked. And I used to go to the Music Inn all the time after school, and Matt Umanov's. I would go to Matt Umanov's and hang out with Zeke Shine. And I went to nursery school at Village Community Nursery School or something with Ben Umanov, Matt Umanov's son. We're the same age. So I really knew Matt Umanov since I was very, very young. And he was always very nice to me. And so I would hang out there at Matt Umanov's with Matt and with Zeke Shine. And they just closed. Matt Umanov's closed. Matt retired.
I have an interview with Matt next week.
Oh, good. Great. Tell him I said hello, please.
I will certainly do so.
And then I would go to the Music Inn on West 4th Street, which is like the alpha and omega of folk music in Greenwich Village. It was the first and it shall be the last. That place has been open since 1950. I remember the old owner, Jerry. He passed on a few years ago. Jeff Slatnick is still there. He's in his 70s now. He's been working there since 1965. He's a wonderful guy. And I loved the Music Inn. What a fantastic place that is. It's like from a different world or from the old world.
Yeah.
And it's like a total anachronism, a miracle that it's still there. So can't give the Music Inn enough props.
What's the name of the old guy at the Music Inn?
His first name was Jerry.
Jerry.
And I'd have to look up his last name.
No, you gave me the full name of someone like just now.
And the guy that
Jeff's
is the current owner or runs it is named Jeff Slatnick. And you'll know him right away. He's the old guy with glasses and a beard.
Oh wait, the big gray beard. Okay, so no, I do know. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, that's Jeff Slatnick.
He put me onto the sitar.
Oh good, yeah, he plays Indian classical music. He's a real weird dude.
Real weird.
But nice. He's actually a mensch in his own weird way. Tell him I said hi if you see him. I owe him a visit, long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to go to the Music Inn. I got that banjo at the Music Inn around 1999.
Oh, that's great.
That was my first good banjo that I got. And my parents bought it for me. And yeah.
I like that question of if you could go on a little nostalgic tour of Greenwich Village, of your high school's Greenwich Village, what places would you stop by,
who
or for what?
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, back in the day was, Zito's Bread was on Bleecker between 6th and 7th. That was a great bakery. I loved their bread. I miss that place. They've been closed a long time. Rocco's Italian Pastries Ice is still there, although they've remodeled. That's an awesome place. I love Rocco's. Their Italian Ice is my favorite. And then Matt Yuminov's is right there. I used to go there all the time. And the Music Inn on West 4th Street. Those were the big places for me. And then Washington Square Park. And, that we used to go to this like restaurant, like hamburger place, like over farther on the west side, that would serve us underage.
This is important.
I can't remember the name. I'd have to look it up. They're still open. I could look it up. I'll look at my phone.
Yes. You're looking for a hamburger place that's going to serve you underage, Talia?
I'm always looking for
a. And then Jackson Smith and I used to go to a place called 9C, which was a country music bar on 9th Street and Avenue C. They would also serve us underage. And Greg Gehring used to play there, the awesome New York country musician. And we used to go there to check that out and to see what was going on there. That was fun. And I used to hang out at Jackson's house, at his mom's house, which was near Elizabeth Irwin. And that was a revelation for me because, you know, his mom's an awesome musician. And she had a boyfriend at the time who was a cool guy and turned me on to some cool music. When I was young, he was making cassette tapes for me.
Who?
His name was Oliver. I don't know where he is now. Probably on Facebook, we could find out.
So like mixtapes? Cassette tapes.
Yeah, cassette tapes. The main one I remember was of Emmett Miller. He made me a tape of Emmett Miller, who was not well, and still not obviously well known, but was not well known to anybody at that time. And that was awesome. Emmett Miller really blew me away. And Pepe Rosso, that little Italian restaurant on House, just off Houston.
Yeah.
That was a good time. Cheap eats. Mamoon's, of course, for falafel. And Joe's Pizza. They're still the best. New York Street Pizza. So good. Did I miss anything? Who knows?
Would you ever go to, City as Park?
No.
That's
that school that's nearby?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. No, I never hung out there. Others may have, but I didn't. I remember my friend, this girl, Emma, that was in my class, and her parents were artists, and she would have parties occasionally that I would go to at her parents' art studio. I guess that must have been in Soho somewhere. I have a memory of that. My friend Alex Sirianni, his dad owned a recording studio on West Broadway, I believe. We'd hang out there sometimes. And sometimes have parties at his parents' house if they were out of town, which was nearby also. I don't know. I didn't have a lot of friends in high school. It wasn't a big social time for me. I was really awkward. Weird high school kid.
Yeah.
But I had a few friends. And, the Corner Bistro. I didn't have to look it up. I remembered. It was called the Corner Bistro. And they would, they were open late and served underage people and whatever. I bought a fake ID at, some seedy place on 6th Avenue, just, south of West 4th Street. There are still seedy places right there.
Yeah.
But they used to sell fake IDs. I don't know if they still do.
I got mine in Brooklyn.
I see. Yeah. I don't know. Hanging out.
I want to go back to the revelation.
Yeah.
Because it's important. I feel like seeing your, not even your idols, but seeing people who you'd imagine yourself potentially being one day as kind of human and with reason and faults? Like, what?
Sure. Well, I always wanted to connect with the older generation of folk music people in New York, and eventually I did. So I have a number of friends that are older musicians, you know, New York people now for a number of years now. So I've gotten to be very close with and work a lot with John Cohen, who was a founder of the New Lost City Ramblers and an incredible musician and artist. And he, you know, was a seminal Greenwich Village, you know, folk music person. And also with Peter Stamfill from the Holy Nodal Rounders. He's a real, very good friend and someone that's been a real guide for me in learning how to play music, him and John. And also Peter Siegel, who is a seminal figure in the folk music world as a musician, but also as an audio engineer. And I've done a number of projects with him. He lives on the Upper West Side now. So yeah, it's been great to get to know them. You know, Peter Siegel and John are like two like really awesome like older Jewish guys. You know, New York Jewish guys. I'm a New York Jewish guy, but from a different generation. But it's like, you know, I feel like we really get along. We like see things in a similar way, and it's been like a huge honor to get to know them really well personally, and get to know their faults.
Yeah.
And just get to know them in a way that's like really, really cool and natural. And you know, they're my friends, so we work together all the time. It's great.
That is great, but I was meaning more when you said that after hanging out at Patti Smith's place and how that was a revelation.
It was just to, you know, to be near, my parents aren't musicians or artists or anything, which is good or fine, you know, just fine.
Yeah.
But it was great to be near some, you know, working, living musicians and artists and stuff like that, and get a feel for how people like that live and think and act, you know, good and bad, or whatever. So yeah, that was revelatory for me to be near that.
I had that too, through Little Red. That's why it was, you know, just it's so many amazing people, and you can begin to see yourself doing what they did.
I thought I'd break this out because it's like, this is a project that I worked on with Peter Siegel and John Cohen. So this is Clarence Ashley. He was, you know, he's a legendary American banjo player, and he came to Greenwich Village in the 1960s and started playing shows in New York. And this is a live recording that Peter Siegel made of him at Gertie's Folk City, the awesome folk club from back then, in 1963, that we recently put out on Jalopy Records, which is a record label that I help run here at the Jalopy Theater. And this photo on the cover was taken by John Cohen. And he also wrote the little essay on the back of their album that John also took this photo. And Peter Siegel and I produced this album, produced by Peter Siegel, associate producer. That's me, Eli Smith. And John Cohen, so we put this out last year. And I was proud to work on this project with them. And I've worked on a number of albums with both of them, but this is the most recent. So, and of course, Greenwich Village right there. So connecting with that is a big deal for me, to connect with this, to have worked on this album, for example.
It's crazy. Like, it's crazy to me that...
It's crazy. I feel crazy. But, you know, in a way, for me, it's like keeping a lineage going. I mean, it's not in Greenwich Village anymore. I feel like I've been kicked out of my hometown. It's too expensive. I'll never live there. And I have no reason to go there. There's nothing going on particularly that I need to check out. So I never go to Greenwich Village anymore. It's like being banished by gentrification from... like your hometown, so that's a bummer. And the scene such as it is has totally moved to Brooklyn, and in fact Brooklyn is now too expensive, and most of my friends live in Queens. But the Jalopy Theater is in Brooklyn, so here we are.
Here we are.
You know, to keep, to not have the chain be broken, and to have a continuous, you know, what's the right word? A continuous line, but you know, intentionally have continuity between the quote folk music, countercultural, progressive, whatever cultural scene of the Popular Front era in the 1930s that Little Red and Elizabeth Erwin was so connected to have that continue in an intentional and educated way from the 1930s to now.
Yeah.
Which was tough because there was a huge generation gap in the 70s and 80s when the, you know, the conservative counter revolution happened, and you know everything, you know, things got rolled back, and now it's a back and forth over time. So who knows? And there was a big generation gap there, so that there aren't many people working in the field that are in their 40s or 50s or early 60s now. There's like me and my friends in our 20s and 30s, and then people in their like 70s and 80s. But to be able to connect with them and like, you know, make that happen, it's crazy. And I got to know Pete Seeger a little bit. You know, I met him. I got to go to his house up by Beacon a couple times, and like chop wood and like clear brush with him, because when you visited him, he'd have you do something, like he'd have you help him with something. And that was cool to get to visit him. And in fact, actually, when I was like 16, or I can't remember how old I was, I went to, like, he was having like a birthday concert somewhere, like in the city, like downtown, I guess, or somewhere, I can't remember even. Maybe at Irving Plaza or something, but I just really can't remember. And somehow, through somebody, I was selected to go on stage and present him with a birthday cake. And so I did that, which was great. But as a result of that, I got to spend some time with him backstage. And I was just starting to learn to play the banjo, and I had my banjo, and I had him sign my banjo. But then he also showed me some stuff, which was great, because I didn't know anybody that played the banjo. And weird as it is, he actually showed me some of the first stuff that I learned on banjo just in those few moments, powerful moments, backstage at this his birthday show. And then I, of course, I visited him a few, you know, years later, like 5 or 6 years later. I got to go to his house and stuff and spend more time. And then I taught banjo and folk music, whatever, briefly at Camp Kinderland, which was like a progressive camp that's probably connected to Little Red in some way. Yes. And this is when I was maybe 17 or 18, and I mean, Pete Seeger touched so many people. He was such a nice person and generous with his time, and he really cared. And I wrote him a letter, because I knew that he had taught at Camp Kinderland. He'd done what I was about to do, but many years, like 50 years earlier. And I wrote him a letter, and I must have included my phone number, because he called me. And I remember being at home at my parents' house one day, and the phone rang, and it was Pete Seeger. And I was like, oh, shit. And then we had a long phone conversation. He sang me some songs over the phone, and we talked about different stuff. I think we talked about, like astronomy. Like, his brother, John Seeger, I think, his older brother, was a pioneering radio astronomer. This is how I remember it. And, you know, was like surveying the universe with radio telescopes. And somehow Pete Seeger and I got onto that. And I've always liked astronomy also. Space. anyway, so yeah, you know, I got to know Pete Seeger a little bit, you know, over the years, or at least be affected by him. And I think I was in the last generation of people that had that opportunity as well. Because he became so old and he died. So I don't even know how well remembered he is today by young people. He was very famous at one time. And now I don't think he's like really remembered almost at all. And I don't know how well his music has stood the test of time in some ways. So, I don't know. He's such a seminal and powerful figure, but I don't know if he's really well remembered today in a certain way. But I think I was in the last generation before the internet and the last generation to be affected by Pete Seeger.
I'm extremely jealous.
Yeah,
but
sorry.
No, that's the thing. It's like there's so many. I'm so grateful for, you know, my music apps and the ways that I can connect things.
Well, yeah, but
it's
not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
So I have a massive record and CD collection because I try to connect to those people in those times, but.
Well, I wish that I had been around in the 1960s so that I could have gone to the Friends of Old Time Music concerts and seen Mississippi John Hurt and Doc Boggs and Clarence Ashley and all those other people play, you know, at Gertie's Folk City. Wow, that would have been incredible to actually see them and not just have to listen to their records. So, we all wish.
I don't wish for the 90s. Like, trust me, I do not.
I also wish totally sucked.
For the 50s.
You know, and then the friggin', I'd lived through the Bush era. That totally sucked. And then everything sucks, and now we have to deal. Now we have to live through the Trump era. It's a total disaster. And the friggin' climate's about to combust, and we're heading straight into a futuristic, like, dystopian wasteland.
Yep.
So that's too bad, but maybe something good will happen.
Maybe a time machine will come at it.
Yeah, maybe the aliens will come down and save us.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Seriously.
Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your stories.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to meet you all.